hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool. And today we've got a special guest coming on the show, Jonathan. I think it's going to be fun. Absolutely. A friend of mine, somebody that I've gotten to know over the last couple of years. So it's going to be a good topic.
Yeah, the seven deadly sins of story-based marketing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Like the seventh.
So you'll see the tie-in for Seven Deadly Sins once we once we get into Greg's story a little bit. But he's in the green room, so we're gonna why not just introduce him and bring him in.
Pull him out of that green room. He's got a
bunch. All right. So before I do, I'll just read this. I said, hey Greg, can you send me a quick bio? You know, because we're like friends, so it's super casual effort as if it's not already around here.
Yeah.
So he sent me, he's like, okay, here you go. Greg and his wife run some e-commerce businesses and also help others do the same. Greg especially enjoys the power and intimacy of email marketing and just won't shut up talking about it if you get him going. So welcome to the show, Persuasion by the Pint, Greg Johnson.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Did you write that third person? I mean, the whole, do you like to do that?
Sometimes if it's a bio for a prestigious, type podcast. Of show like this, like then, this one.
Yeah, definitely class to join up a bit, but third person talking about yourself in third person, maybe the eighth deadly sin.
I never do it in person.
Okay.
I never talk about myself in the third person in person.
In person. So you're not Jerry.
Not right. Jerry. No, no.
All right. That's for our older listeners the young kids who have rediscovered Seinfeld, either one. So it was Jerry, right? The guy that talked about himself, because it wasn't Jerry Seinfeld, but it was another character. But I thought his name was Jerry too.
I just remember the character, not the name.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think it was Jerry. Maybe not. Anyway. All right. Well, we have some beverages. Like I said, this is going to be a good show. Seven deadly sins of story-based marketing, particularly email. Is that right, Greg? What we're going to be talking about?
This applies to everything, really. Like if you're using
everything in the world.
Story to sell, I like email. So that's kind of the frame that I use. But yeah.
That's what you use on your kids, your wife. By the way, how many kids do you have? Here.
I have seven kids.
Yeah.
No.
One of them is,
are you serious?
So yeah, my 7-year-old's birthday is today. So if you hear, some sort of shouting or noise or ruckus upstairs, there's more noise than usual at the moment, going on because of that. So
yeah.
Is the 7-year-old, like there's a lot of noise. Where does he fall along the,
So he's kind of square in the middle. Okay. We have our oldest is 19. And our youngest is one.
Wow.
Whoa. That's a whole story right there.
That's a, yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's a,
seven
that's a lot.
Deadly sins.
If so any of your kid, if any of your listeners,
kid, yeah.
If any of your listeners sell fertility products or anything like that, I want to reach out later. We'll give contact details at the end.
Yeah, my wife came from a very big family. And I think that the running joke was, when are you not pregnant? You know, it's like, I was like, yeah, but no, I think that's great. I love it. I love a huge family. I mean, that's, you got built in Social Security right there, man.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's like,
my dad was one of seven, but we did not continue the tradition. We stuck with two and that was it.
That's usually the way the trend goes.
Just up and down.
You know, you come from a large, you kind of go the other direction there for a while and then you flip.
Yeah, because I was an only child. So,
wife and I both came from small families. We each grew up with one sibling. Mm-hmm. So, okay. We have no idea what we're doing. We don't know how to run a big family.
That's awesome.
And so every day is just
it's an adventure.
Chaos.
Right now, the 19-year-old's probably, he gets to pick up a lot of those duties, right? I mean, that's a shoulder some responsibility.
So my oldest is my daughter, and then I have a son about to turn 17. So they are, I would say, more helpful than not, which is good.
Yeah.
Cool. Good. Well, let's jump into some beverages, Greg. I know you brought something. We always let our guests go first. Yep. So tell us what you brought.
Certainly. Well, I do enjoy a variety of beverages. I did not have a beer currently on hand that I was excited to bring on. So what I did is I grabbed my current favorite straight malt whiskey.
Nice.
This is from Spirit Hound Distillers, which is located in Lyons, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you guys are familiar with Oscar Blues, Dale's Pale Ale, they originated in Lyons, Colorado as well. Have since moved their main production up the road to a different city. But Spirit Hound is still in Lyons. It's just this little podunk little tasting room off the side of the road in between Boulder and Estes Park. It is the best. I think I can say this. I think it is consistently the best whiskey from a distiller that I've ever had within Colorado. There's so many great ones here. I tend to grab local. Good Colorado. These guys whiskey. Are my favorite. All right. It's fantastic.
Make a note of that.
Yeah. Very cool. And show us, you got the bottle there or you just got the
I do have the bottle.
Yeah. Show it off. Yeah. Typical, pretty
that bottle is getting, bottle. Getting really low. Hold that
it
up.
It is really low. Actually, I don't know if you can.
Not the first sip.
You got seven kids, man. That bottle doesn't last very long.
That's right. This is a working bottle right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Stays at the desk. All right. Jonathan, what do you have up there on tap?
Ooh, I think I've got a good one here, Sean. I have a goose. Right. So I had to go back on several episodes back because we've had this one on in the past, but this is a, I think we had this one back when you were still in town and we were doing the podcast together here. Because I went back on some of the archives. This is a Goose Island Bourbon County Stout.
No way.
Oh, yes.
I almost bought that yesterday.
Are you serious?
Like they have it in stock right now.
This is the 2021, HB. Right? The 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I saw this on the shelf today. But
they were out of second mortgage applications when I wanted to pick it up. So I couldn't pull any equity out. So
yes, this is a little expensive. We're talking a little bit of change there. So, from what I recall, it was well worth it. I'm trying to remember. So the one that we had was, I think we had, so I'm pulling up the notes. This was a 15.2%. This is actually a 14, what is this? Oh yeah. 14 even.
Okay.
This is the Goose Island Bourbon County Stout. It is a rich Imperial Stout that is blended from a mix of bourbon barrels from distilleries such as Heaven Hill, Wild Turkey, and Buffalo Trace. But I love Buffalo Trace. Yeah. Each aged in freshly emptied bourbon barrels for 8 to 14 months. Expect flavors of chocolate, vanilla, oak, whiskey, molasses. So I love the sound of that.
Yeah, that does sound good.
It's going to be thick.
Yeah. 14%, man. That's
Sean no be joke. Asking the questions here.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I've also got one that we've had on before just because I can only get it this time of year.
Yeah.
So when I saw it back in the store, I had to grab it. So I've got a full grown Saint Nick.
Oh, yeah.
So this is from Tufts Brewery up in Fort Worth.
Yep.
And this is basically, it is an Imperial Stout loaded with everything spice and everything nice. And it's a limited run, limited edition, comes in at 12.1%, but it's, be interesting to see if it's as good as I remember.
Yeah.
Or if it's just like really good marketing, but this one's also pretty thick. Mm-hmm. But I remember it has it's like eating Christmas cookies or drinking Christmas cookies, I guess. Which, by the way, I can smell downstairs because my wife is cooking.
I almost picked up. There was a, what kind? What kind is she cooking this week?
I don't know what they're called.
Last week, you had the Reese's.
Yeah, she's making another batch of those type things.
Man, I love those.
Yeah.
So I almost picked up a gift pack at the establishment today that it was a cookie box. It was an assorted cookie box of beers. They were cookie beers.
Cookie beers. Cool.
So I may have to try that next week. We'll see.
All right. Well, gentlemen, should we?
Let's hold them up.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Man, that does taste like a cookie. It's so good.
A beer that tastes like a cookie. Can't beat that.
Yeah. It does have a little bit of, we'll let Greg, well, Greg's already said what he likes. So Greg, we give this a 1 to 4 pints on the show. You're a rabid listener. So
yeah, you know, this distillery does, a lot of their stuff is like limited run, single barrel stuff. So different batches have very different character. Hmm. Some of them are more like a scotch. Some of them are just, you know, very, very mild. This one is mild, but with a lot of character to it. Just imagine what a really complex whiskey smells like, all the different.
So notes would this be there. Like smoky on the smoky end?
This or is
be
not on the smoky end. You know, okay. Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of smoky, peaty liquor.
Yeah, that's what they like here in Texas.
Yeah.
Very smoky.
I kind of go the other way. Like I like cognac and Armagnac just for that part of the flavor profile of a, you know, distilled and barreled spirit. So this is my favorite bottle that we've ever received from Spirit Hound. So this is definitely a 4 for me.
I said 1 to 4, didn't I? I meant 1 to 5. So
this is definitely a 5 for me. Do you do fractional? I mean, can I do 4.8?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, 4.8. You're teeter. You don't want to give it the, I was about to hit the applause button on a 5. Yeah, so you're going to hold off
sacred
on
ground.
That. Yeah, that's sacred. That's reserved only for the elite.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So 4.8. All right. Very 4.8. Cool. All right, Jonathan, is it as good as you remember?
Well, you know,
it's a different year, so it's a little different.
Yeah. Every year's different. When we last had this, obviously this was before we had a rating system, so I couldn't see what we had mentioned. I just said, I think what I said was, it was thick and thick and thick. So, which is still the case. It's good, but you can taste that 14%. This is one of those, if you make it through the bottle, it's good night. So I'm going to say 3.8. It's a little heavy for my taste.
Yeah.
So,
okay. That's fair,
but it was worth trying. So,
yeah. So I'm going to give this, this is unique because it's definitely Christmas flavored. Like it tastes like, it's got a lot of ginger in it. And it does have a little bit of an aftertaste, which is not my favorite part of it, but the flavor is so good at the top that I put up with the little bit of aftertaste. And like we said, I think last week, you just keep drinking. You don't have to worry about the aftertaste.
That's right.
Just keep going. So, so I'm going to give this a 4.25, just the bitterness on the end just kills it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I know it also gets better as you go, because as it breathes, it gets a little better. So.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it 4.25.
Fair score.
All right. Well, I'm excited about this. Greg and I have been, we kind of planned this a little bit over the last week. Mm-hmm. Greg did all the work. I just kind of threw out an idea.
Cool.
And
we're going to be showing some graphics.
I don't have any graphics.
Dang it. I was looking for
something. But he did tell me today, and this got me super excited for all our geeks out there, especially copy type geeks, all 7 of his points start with the same letter.
Ooh.
Isn't that sexy?
Memorable. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So I'm excited about that. That makes me really curious too. I don't know if we'll get through all 7 as we tend to ramble a little bit, but we'll do our best. So
outside Greg, of having 7 kids, give our audience just a really, Greg, a brief background of who you are and kind of what you do
absolutely.
Your history.
Let's keep it brief. Brief-ish.
Absolutely.
So I've been a full-time business owner since 2013, but started out doing something completely different than this. My background is in science and chemistry. Mm. And I actually started a business with some partners where we were providing refurbished laboratory equipment to startup labs and customers who couldn't go out and drop millions of dollars on brand new capital equipment. So we were a good alternative to that, still providing things that worked and getting into a lot of the training and support as well. Turns out it wasn't very fun. I ended up building something that I didn't really enjoy doing every day. And almost right as we had started that, I was doing e-commerce on the side for fun, vacation money, that kind of thing. Yeah. But as my skill level and knowledge level with that grew, I realized that I really, really enjoyed it. The idea of having global reach and impact with some silly little thing that you sell online. And in wanting to get better at that, I by necessity started learning about marketing and how to really position things appropriately so that somebody would want to buy the thing that you have. And so that has just been a like an interest out of necessity, but has kind of become a passion. Like I love this. Mm-hmm. I love the applied psychology of marketing, but also really like to serve people in this way. My last business was very service-based, but I found that I didn't enjoy serving people in that way. Mm-hmm. So what I get to do now with, sorry, Sean, cut you off. My wife and I run a business called The Little Catholic Box. It's a subscription box, quarterly. My wife curates items from other people. So we're kind of providing distribution and exposure for people who do like handmade arts and crafts type stuff. And then we blast it out to our audience. And the aspect of this that I have just kind of fallen in love with is really the email marketing. Like I love writing emails. I love having the communication, kind of building the relationship with people. And I enjoy it enough that I do it on the side for other people as well. Sure. So I kind of do this, I don't know, like advising or consulting type thing on the side where I'm helping other people to kind of do what I do in their own business. Cause this is not a easy thing for many people. I feel like it is for me and I love doing it. And so I can kind of plug myself into other brands and other people's stuff and help them out as well.
So this is a subscription box?
Like it is.
So physical. So people get it's like a
physical items. Yep.
Yeah. Monthly thing. So cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So you kind of go out and source a lot of different things every month and package those and send those out to your subscribers. That's cool.
Basically. Yeah. Those. Yeah.
I love that model.
Yeah. It's a cool model. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. That's what I was going to ask. So you didn't really interrupt me. You were on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
So very cool. All right. Well, let's jump into the seven deadly sins. And the way this came up, Jonathan was like, we were like, Greg wanted to talk about storytelling. I was like, well, we've done that quite a few times.
Yeah.
Even though it's very important. I was like, why don't we take the flip side of that? Mm. So we decided to take the flip side and I made Greg work his brain a little bit to come up with the topics. So yeah, so what we don't want to be doing, and I'm sure what we should be doing will also come out in that. So
sure. Yeah.
So Greg, I'm gonna let you drive and we'll cut you off as we have questions.
Sounds good. Now just to be clear, I'd like to point out, Sean, you suggested, hey Greg, do you think you could do the seven deadly sins of story-based marketing? And this was in a Messenger chat, and I was like,
yeah.
And I was thinking, yeah, and it like you immediately sense another one, you're like, but it could also be five. Like you didn't think I could do seven, right?
Yeah, that's true. I did. And I was trying to let you off easy in case.
That's why I said, no, we'll do seven.
The five deadly sins. That just wouldn't
work. It doesn't work.
I know.
It doesn't. And I thought,
but see, that was persuasion because I knew he wouldn't go for that.
Right. And then you knew I'd go above and beyond.
That's right.
Use alliteration. Yep. Make them all start with the same letter. So that's where we are.
Yep. I like it. All right. So what is the first, and these are no particular order of severity. No particular order. Right. So, so what is the first deadly sin of story-based marketing?
So real quick, I want to give I want to put a box around this. Here's some context. So the definition I'm using here for story-based marketing is when you are using story just as a tool to engage your readers. Oftentimes in emails, what I like to do is like pull in anecdotes from my life and incorporate it some way into the message or call to action that I want to lead to. So this is kind of the model that I use for a lot of the writing that I do. I've seen other brands do this. Other people do this as well. Just kind of engaging people with a story and then having that lead into something relevant to the brand. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. The first deadly sin of story-based marketing is being self-absorbed. So when you are telling an anecdote or relating a personal story, you have to keep in mind that what you're trying to do is you're trying to achieve some sort of resonance with the reader. So you can tell your story and it can be interesting, but what makes it interesting to somebody listening oftentimes is how they relate that to themselves in some way. There can be, we can think about stories that we like to engage in, movies, television, other media. But we relate to the characters oftentimes in a way that, like a hero. The reason that heroes are desirable characters is because we see something in them that we either see in ourselves or wish that we saw in ourselves. So if you are telling a story without, I guess, an eye towards how this is going to be received by your target audience, like why do they care? Why would they care? If you're just rambling on about yourself and your own thing without understanding how that applies to the people that you're talking to, then it's boring. It's flat out boring.
So how do you, there's a lot of, shouldn't use I, but when you tell a story, especially if you're using anecdotes from your own life, you kind of have to use I.
Yes.
So kind of how do you balance those two things?
So let me give a concrete example of this.
Cool.
Somebody that I'm kind of working with at the moment, we were doing some copy review. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at one of his emails that he had sent in the past, and it was very much this kind of brand peacocking, right? Here's our brand and we're so great and people love us and we're so good at what we do and we have the best products and we have the lowest prices and you should love us because that's what people do is they love us. That's how it came across.
Right.
And you read that and you're just like,
yeah,
you either don't care or you're actually repelled by it. It's mm-hmm. like, who the hell are these people? I don't, what? So that's what I really mean. When it's just nothing but self-promotion without any kind of lead up or reason for anybody to care what you have to say.
Right.
And there's when people take that approach, there's usually very little story in it. It's more like but it's not telling a story.
Well, what this was supposed to be was kind of a brand origin story.
Okay.
It was, hey, we started back in such and such date because we wanted to do this. And we're so awesome at this aspect of it. And we're really great at this aspect of it. And everybody loves us for this. The original intent was to tell a story, but the story that was told was not engaging. It was boring. Right. Yeah. It was completely self-absorbed, like totally inwardly focused. Like there wasn't an understanding of how this was going to land in somebody's inbox and how they would receive it.
Yeah. But Bob, I don't know if Bob Bly, but we've had him on the show before, but I follow him. Sean follows him, I'm sure. Old school copywriter. I love reading him sometimes because he rails against these up and coming copywriters who you know, they're pretty much ego driven, you know, everything's mm-hmm. about, you know, how well I, you know, how much money I can make my clients and blah, blah, blah. You know, it all centers around who they are.
Yes.
And he laughs them off, you know, it's like, it's, you know, these greenhorns don't know anything about marketing. Mm-hmm. If that's how they're trying to position themselves. So yeah. Totally right. Agree.
Right.
So what'd you do for that client? Did you totally start over? Were you able to salvage an email like that? Like, what was your approach?
What we did is I kind of outlined what my strategy is for this type of thing, what my template is. And it's a really basic email template. It's basically you lead in with a hook. You kind of tell a legitimate personal story, like anecdote, something that you would talk about with your friends at the bar or a restaurant, a story that you would tell people that you're sitting around bullshitting with, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if the story that you're telling is not interesting enough to share at the bar or dinner party, then you're doing it wrong. Use that kind of narrative flow and have a clear call to action that you're driving towards. And between the story and the call to action, have a transition that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And if you can't find one that makes sense, then blatantly say, hey, this transition doesn't make sense, but, that's it basically. And I think just that reframing for him about how to approach this and that this is a conversation, like an email is a conversation between two people, even though we're sending it one to many, mm-hmm. it's received as a conversation between two individuals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so treat it like that. That should be the narrative style. If you want to do this way. And so he just rewrote it on his own. Like I actually had nothing to do with the revision or rewriting. A week later, he sent me back a revised version telling the same story, but in that narrative fashion. And it was amazing. It was so good because he, you know, instead of just talking about how great the brand was, he talked about why the brand exists. And it was really the origin story from the point of view of the founder. Like why would you even do this? What was the purpose? What problem were you solving? Who were you trying to help? And he did such a good job. He told that story and incorporated it with really the core values of the brand. And it landed so well. Like you read it. And even though I'm not the target market for this particular brand, reading it, you end up liking the guy at the end of it. Even if
right.
what they sell has nothing to do with your life, you just like, wow, this is a good guy. He's built something that helps people. This is important. Cool. So that was it was the same info. He just kind of flipped the narrative of how it was being presented. Yep. Instead of a billboard, it was a conversation.
Instead of being self-absorbed, he was thinking about the reader.
Yes.
So, all right. So being self-absorbed is number one. Let's move on to number two. What's the second deadly sin of story-based marketing?
The second deadly sin of story-based marketing is being spurious. Ooh, so let me define this here. I'm sure all the listeners know what spurious means, but
I'm trying to write this down. I don't even know how to spell it. Spurious.
So this is spurious basically means fake, phony, unbelievable. And what I'm trying to convey with this one is if it's unrelatable or unbelievable, if it feels contrived, if it feels made up, then people are not going to care. And this is actually tricky when you have a really, fantastical true story. Like if it's so crazy, like, you know, it's so crazy, this must be real. Mm-hmm. It's very easy when you're telling that to just become very sensational with it. And again, that I think can turn into this, people are so used to sensationalized news and information. Mm-hmm. It actually causes them to kind of tune out or turn off the message. So you, again, you want to keep it, you want to keep it as like a conversational storytelling. So if the story that you're telling is extraordinary and fantastic, you almost have to temper that down or at least acknowledge along the way in like a self-referential way. Like, I know this sounds unbelievable, but this is true. This is what happened.
Yeah. I think it goes back to, like, you know, where I learned copywriting. We talked about the barstool conversation. You mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you were about to tell a crazy, unbelievable story, the first thing you might say is like, "Hey, I know this is hard to believe, but I'm telling you, like, this is how it happened."
And you
remind people along the way with these, and that makes for great, like, transition or pauses in the copy. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know. I thought it was crazy too. I couldn't believe this was happening. And then you continue the story. Mm-hmm. Right, just to check in and let them know that, you know, it sounds unbelievable.
Exactly.
And that adds a ton of credibility. If you could just kind of get in the head of the reader, and if they're like when you feel as a writer, you have to kind of have this gut to know what the reader is feeling. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to put yourself there, and you're like, okay, this is probably where they're starting to doubt again, or forgot that I said that this was unbelievable. So I need to remind them here.
Right. Yeah. If you know that objections are creeping in, you can address those as you go.
Sure.
So that you don't have this buildup of incredulity or disbelief about what you're doing, because then it loses its impact. When people detach from the story, then you lose the benefit of using a story in the first place, knowing that it kind of sidesteps around like that logical, rational filter that, you know, for what we're doing is kind of a wall in between where we are and the decision that we'd like them to potentially make. The other way that this plays in is, in cases where you are is different than where your audience or customers are. Meaning if you're kind of in a, like a leadership role or teaching role or some sort of, aspirational role for your characters or audience, then I think you have to be careful about how you deal with that gap. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I think we've all seen the marketers with the jets and the Lamborghinis, and you know, the goal there is to have this aspirational character that people are striving for. But I think when it's done poorly, then what you do is you create this barrier. It's like, mm-hmm. that person is so distant from where I am. When I fail to see the connection from me to them, you know, if I no longer believe that this person can lead me to where they are or where I want to be, then I tune it out. I stop listening because it's lost believability.
Yeah. A good example of that, especially in the internet marketing world, is, you know, and this is one of the, this is, you know, this happens with the kind of stages of market sophistication that we talk about with Eugene Schwartz, and that mm-hmm. it gets more and more fantastical, you know? So it used to be like, hey, you want to make a couple extra $100 or $1,000 each month to cover your car payment or whatever, you know, as far as internet marketing or home opportunities. And then it got to, you know, 10K a month, six figures a year. And now, like, it's hard to find something that's like not $1 million a year. Right. And that's a lot for people to, you know, if you're just working a job or if you're just, you know, doing whatever, to go from there to $1 million a year sounds great. Mm-hmm. But most people can't even comprehend what that would be like. They can't actually believe that that's available to them.
Right.
I agree. We forget where we came from and the mm-hmm. journey we went on. And that maybe your first offer, especially to cold audiences, needs to be how to make your first $1,000.
Yeah.
As opposed to their first million.
Right. If they can't see themselves with, you know, at that end state, if what you're offering is too far beyond what they're imagining, then it doesn't land. It's like offering apples and they want an orange. So even if what you're offering legitimately can get them far further than they realize, like that's an education piece that you don't need to do right now. Right. Yeah.
Well, I know when we did financial copy, one of the things we would do in a promotion is we would work that up over the piece of the copy. And I think you could do that in email as well. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you did have a legitimate million dollar plan or whatever, you know, is comparable in your industry, weight loss, whatever. You could ramp up. You could start the email with an example that's much lower, mm-hmm. you know, how to make your first 1,000. And then when you learn this system, blah, 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 you could turn that, you could repeat that process and turn 1,000 into 5 or 10, you know, keep at it for two, you know, for 6 to 12 months. And you could, it's reasonable. You could turn that into, you know, 15 or 20,000 a month. So you could, in a relatively short amount of time, ramp that up, mm-hmm. which is much more believable to ratchet it up than it is just to come out of the gate swinging with, you know, in this example, $1 million or 100 pounds or whatever it might be for you.
Yeah. But you have to connect the dots from the base of the mountain to the top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you can do that in a story, you know, all the better. You know, exactly. maybe your first time you offered your course, let's say it's a weight loss course, you were able to get people, you know, results where they could lose 10 pounds in 90 days. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you learned this other technique and you compounded it. And all of a sudden, when you put the two together, it was worth 30 pounds in 90 days. You know, that's more believable as you stack those things. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes it look like you have more of a system too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But you get to tell a story along the way. All right. So number one is being self-absorbed. Number two is being spurious. All I can think about Jonathan is Steve Spurrier when I hear that word. So, which,
advisor.
Anyway,
advisor. Yeah.
The old ball coach.
Yep.
And then, so what's our third deadly sin, Greg?
The third deadly sin of story-based marketing is being sluggish.
Sluggish.
Being sluggish.
Spurious and sluggish.
So and you sluggish. Went deep in the thesaurus for this.
Oh, episode. Not that deep. This is all right here. This just floats around right here. I just
That's impressive. That's
sluggish impressive. Is after you drink a whole one of these.
I was going to say, Jonathan, I was going to check in with you because I saw you do the refill.
Yep.
And I can actually tell when you do the refill because your hand it switches hands.
It switches hands. It does. I do the old switcheroo, and I think you're right, Sean. It does get a little better as it breathes.
Yeah.
So
all stout, especially the richer the stouts and imperial stouts are, the more air they get, the better they taste.
Yep.
It's almost like you need to open them 10 minutes before the show and just let them breathe. Plus, they're supposed to be like 58 degrees or something like that, not ice cold like a regular beer. So,
you know, something worth trying is running one of those through like one of those wine aerators that you use for like a complex red wine. It's the same principle. You want to open it up a little bit, get some oxidation going on.
Yeah, like a good Cabernet or Merlot.
Yeah.
So that's a good idea.
I might have to revise the rating on this because I
might have your to taste buds have just succumbed to the alcohol content. One of the two.
Yeah, something has changed my rating for sure. I don't know if it's the alcohol or if it's actually the taste has gotten better, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'm about to break into the second one, so Greg, you may have to run the show shortly.
All right. Yeah. So I got us off track. I'm sluggish. Why is
sluggish.
It?
Yeah, Let's talk about sluggish. Sluggish has to do with pace. And the analogy I like to use for this one is we all have that relative, usually a little older, and they start to relate a story to you. Mm-hmm. And the story has no end. There are no plot elements to the story. There's there's no climax. There's no resolution.
Preach.
It's just simply a stream of consciousness.
I'll write that down.
Rambling, relating, you know, history or supposed history of particular events. So I think we've all experienced that. at least one.
Probably will in the next couple of weeks if you haven't recently. Yeah. If you're having family.
I'm sure
in
all
town.
Of us around Thanksgiving have experienced.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, you know, I caught myself watching, which is a Thanksgiving classic, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. And to support what you're saying, it's so funny. There's so many great lines in that movie. But Steve Martin, if you're going to tell a story, have a point. I mean, that's what he's telling, you know, John Candy.
It's like
the lovable John Candy in the movie. It's so funny. Yeah. There's so many great lines.
Yeah. I enjoy that one.
So talk to us about pace. How do you do that?
Yep.
So I think what this comes down to is the thing that was actually most difficult for me to learn about copywriting. And it's this idea that less is more. So if I'm kind of brain dumping like an anecdote that I know I want to use, and I pound it out, I tell the story like I tell it. You have to, if you want it to be highest quality, to land well, to actually be a good story, you have to go back through and look at your narrative flow and be willing to cut things out, like cut out details that don't tie directly in to the narrative. I mean, we're not, you know, in this kind of setting, we're not writing a novel. We have a specific goal in mind,